Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
It has been 3.5 years in the making, but this Friday morning at 10 a.m., we have a grand opening for the extension south to UMKC of the Kansas City Streetcar. It is a super exciting week. There are some things to talk about in terms of some of the things on the roads and how things are going to change a little bit. Special guest on the line with us that Jonathan Weir is going to introduce.
It's Tom Garand. Yeah, I nailed it. Hey, Tom.
Of the Streetcar Authority. Hi, Tom.
He's there. Oh, wait, here it is. There.
Hi, Tom.
Didn't go through. Hey, Tom.
Hi, guys. How
Happy
you doing?
Monday.
Doing fantastic.
How are you feeling? Finally getting this done.
We're feeling great. We're feeling super excited, obviously. This, you mentioned 3 years. Through some lens, it's been 7 or 8 years for some of us working on this. And we know it's been a long road for the community. And just couldn't be more excited about finally getting to the opening and providing the service, right, we've been talking about all these years for the public to enjoy.
When do you expect full service to UMKC?
Well, the ceremony is this Friday at 10 o'clock at our Plaza Streetcar stop, and immediately following the ceremony, by 11 a.m. This Friday, we'll be running public service to UMKC.
Awesome.
So come out to the ceremony, watch the festivities, participate in an early ride, and really anytime immediately thereafter, people will be able to hop a streetcar anywhere on Main Street or even downtown to Main Street, south in Midtown if you want to. Enjoy the system, enjoy the extension, get out and ride the streetcar this weekend.
Tom, I want to talk a little bit about what's different with the extension compared to the original stretch of streetcar line. In particular, the solid red paint that we're going to see on Main Street that was different than before, and where you're allowed to drive and where you're not allowed to drive. And there's a video online that explains this too. But if you could lay some of that out for us about what's different in this extension part.
Yeah, so most of our extension is really supported by transit-only lanes, and really thanks to the mayor and council for the support and trying to make this service as effective as it can be long-term in terms of speed and reliability and all of the things that are important in a good, high-quality transit operation. So the general, you know, drivers, if you're not a streetcar rider, you'll notice red paint, you'll notice new signage and striping, and we've really been pleased with the response that we've gotten already. People adapting to this sort of new configuration really have, generally speaking, the public's responded very well to it. It's gone smooth. But obviously pay attention to the travel markings and the new signs and the paint. And obviously all of that helps not just autos, you know, be where they're supposed to be, but helps the streetcar move quickly and efficiently up and down Main Street, which is what this is obviously ultimately all about.
You've talked before about what you learned from doing this the first time, going from River Market to Union Station. What have you learned now with an opening of an extension from the first time that you did this that shaped how the process goes going forward?
Well, we are obviously there's a lot that we feel like we did well and did right. We are leaning heavily into, you know, the expansion of the service, not just the length of the route, but the amount of streetcar service we're putting on the streets. So this weekend, we're going to be running 11 streetcars. When we started this back in 2016, we were running 3 and 4 streetcars. So we'll be running 11 streetcars up and down Main Street approximately every 8 minutes. So great frequency and service. And obviously, we've just been doing a ton of community engagement with community partners up and down the line throughout construction and leading to opening. So we know the community is excited for it. We're leaning in, obviously planning events all weekend long so people can come out, ride the streetcar, you know, hang out with neighbors and friends. And we're seeing businesses do their own thing, too, this weekend, which will be a ton of fun. So, again, we're encouraging everybody to come out for the ceremony or for one of those events that we're holding and celebrate with us.
With the expansion, because it's such a significant expansion, what do you foresee being any, like, difficulties that you guys are going to be dealing with as far as, I guess, timing, making sure everything's running on time, availability, all that?
Well, you know, a big change for us, and that's why we've been testing this for months, right, is we're going through a different part of town, right? The intersections that we're going through, whether it be Linwood, Wood, or MLK, or Cleaver Boulevard, these are bigger streets, right? They're wider, there's more traffic, there's more sophistication into our streetcar system and the signaling and the routing. So we had a lot to learn through the testing period, where we could optimize the system, we could make sure we have a great grasp on, you know, the management of it once it's open, and obviously getting drivers in all of these new neighborhoods familiar and comfortable with the existence of streetcars going up and down the street. So, you know, I think the context is different. As we move out of downtown, the stops are farther apart, our speeds are higher, almost twice the average speed on the Main Street extension from what we generally operate downtown. And obviously, you know, the roadways and the intersections are different. And so we've designed this system to be, right, really effective in this environment. It's why there's changes like some of the platforms are much larger to carry more people. And, you know, we've got better improved lighting at our station stops. So there's things we've integrated that we feel really, really good about that are going to elevate the passenger experience. And also reinforce that this is no longer just a downtown circulator. This really will be the spine of our regional transit system. And we expect to see, right, utilization that sort of reinforces that important role that this extension and this line ultimately will be playing, not just on Main Street, but on connecting people to services, transit services, and different transportation options all over the region.
Yeah, I feel like it's not that the first part of the streetcar was for play, but it was to major tourist sites. That first 2 miles was River Market to Union Station. So it was, if you're going to go out and you're going to have fun. And the interesting thing about this extension that I'm sure we're going to see is people using it as a practical part of their daily lives, not just to go do fun stuff downtown.
Sure. I mean, 100% the ridership base as we move more into sort of midtown and the residential neighborhoods, right? That job access, we're connecting 2 large job centers in the university, which has a lot of students and employees and faculty that live in Midtown. So you're going to see a shift in trip purpose. But I also like to say that downtown, since we started, has been a growing and thriving neighborhood. So yes, downtown is about connecting these major regional destinations that are regional draws. But we have 35,000 residents now living downtown in close proximity to the streetcar who use it every day as well as an asset to their neighborhood, right? Going to the grocery store, going to the dry cleaners, what have you. But no doubt, as we extend through Midtown and we touch not just, right, Westport and entertainment areas, but residential neighborhoods, there'll be a greater, right, segment of our ridership base, and we're going to see some shifting in the usage, obviously, to reflect that change in function and purpose and value that it's going to bring, right? We're just connecting more people for more reasons, and it's one of the reasons why we feel really, really good about the productivity and the ridership that we're anticipating on this extension after we open it.
Yeah, and I hope that it extending kind of opens up the fact that it's there for a lot of people. Because I wonder if a lot of people just think it's, oh, it's this kind of niche, kitschy thing that's just in one little section of downtown. This is, as you pointed out, this is something that is special to Kansas City, but is also something that people will be able to use for more than just going to bars and going to different restaurants and things like that. This is actually a very unique thing that we're doing here.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, and we're you know, a criticism before we opened the starter line was that it was too small, right? That we were too small, that it was only a downtown thing, that it was just for tourists. And obviously, we've proven through the ridership and the benefits and the economic development that it's been way more than that for the city. You know, as we think about what it's meant to redefining how people experience downtown and destinations and go to neighborhoods like the River Market or the Crossroads that maybe they wouldn't have. And so we're so excited about connecting the Midtown destinations, right? Union Hill and obviously Westport and the art museums at 45th Street and the Plaza and the University of Missouri, Kansas City as additional destinations, right, through this unified experience. And we think those things will create their own demand and energy, but we're also able to shine a very bright light for people who may not be aware of these gems that Kansas City has to offer, that they exist, right? And that they're easily accessible and encouraging our visitors and our own residents to explore parts of the city maybe that they hadn't. We saw that happening downtown, and we think and fully expect that we'll see that through Midtown as people explore our city in a whole different way, thanks to this newfound connectivity.
Not that we're not super excited about Friday, because we certainly are, and this is a big deal, but also, what's next? I know we've got the riverfront extension that we're looking at. There's talk of running it maybe more east-west. What's after this?
Yeah, so we have our riverfront construction that's at 95% complete, and we're getting ready in the next month or two to be testing streetcars down to Berkeley Riverfront. And that will really, as the northern leg in connection to the Riverfront District, be sort of the last piece of this central spine that we're building out. And you're absolutely right. We're already planning and thinking about what comes next. And so there's conversations around Midtown East-West still happening, you know, 39th and Linwood sort of corridors. We have a new conversation that we just launched formally. We're doing a study process on 18th and Vine, the opportunity to connect that district to the spine and then even north of the river into North Kansas City. So we fully expect, as this becomes more than just a downtown thing, which we just talked about, right, the magnetic pull of being connected to this is also going to grow. And we're already seeing that. We're already preparing for that, right, starting those really hard community conversations. We know these are sort of generational multi-year initiatives, but regions grow, cities grow, and our transportation system needs to support that in a really proactive way. And we're really excited because we think the energy of this expansion is going to redefine what the system is and what it can be as we look to the future of Kansas City, right, 10 and 20 years from now. So we expect more to come. We're doing hard work behind the scenes to kind of prepare for the next thing. And I fully expect the energy and momentum that these projects in the near term are creating are going to catapult another thing. But we've got work to do to get there.
Tom, I got to ask a money question before we let you go. Still free? Yep. Going to be free for foreseeable future?
It's still free. So we are, as you all know, there's large conversations on the regional transit and bus side. Because of our unique funding mechanism, we feel very confident. We have the ability. We actually think economically that the more people we can get to ride the system, the more benefit not only do we get in people riding and utilizing the public investment, but spending money at shops and restaurants and businesses up and down Main Street. And we saw this downtown. And so we are staying the course with no fare on streetcar. And we are doing a lot of other things in and around that decision to support a high quality operation. But we feel really good about it. There's no plan to charge a fare. We are plugged into these regional conversations. And I'm not going to say we never will. You know, we're going to continue to evaluate how do we deliver a high quality service, you know, for our riders and users and community. How do we extract the most benefit from this investment for our city as we possibly can? And, you know, at the moment, we think we can do that without a fare. We actually think we can extract more benefit from the system without a fare. And so we are marching headlong into that sort of on that trajectory. So no plans. But we will never say never because you never know. But that is our plan to remain fare free.
All right. Tom Garand from the KC Streetcar Authority. Brand new extension opening up all the way to UMKC on Friday. Thanks so much for joining us on Midday.
Congrats.
Well, yeah, and come out Friday night, 6 o'clock after the ceremony, UMKC's 6 to 9 community party there. Celebrate with us on Friday evening, please.
Right, absolutely.
Thanks, Tom. Coming up, we are going to be talking about a heist at the Louvre.
Oh,
it
man.
Sounds like the plot to some kind of, I don't know, Tom Clancy book or something like that.
In broad daylight.
Actually, more like Dan Brown. He wrote those Da Vinci Code things, right? Sounds like that. It's a real thing that happened just yesterday. We'll talk about it next on Midday.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
9:30 in the morning on a Sunday is when this was able to happen at arguably the most famous art museum in the world. The BBC says security protocols failed in preventing a major jewelry heist at the Louvre in Paris, leaving the country with a terrible image. Thieves wielding power tools broke into the world's most visited museum in broad daylight, stealing eight items described as of inestimable value before escaping on scooters, of all things.
Right.
The items that they took include a diamond and emerald necklace that Emperor Napoleon gave to his wife. They are afraid that these items will be broken down and smuggled out of the country.
They did it in 7 to 8 minutes.
Yes.
And yeah, they inestimable value. You know,
inestimable,
you know,
priceless. Can we just call it priceless?
Yeah, when you use a word that's hard to pronounce, inestimable heritage and historical value. I just real quick squirrel moment for a second. Those crown jewels were probably stolen from somebody else. I'm just
originally
yes,
yes. Yeah.
They were probably taken from the hardworking indigenous peoples of wherever.
Yeah.
Napoleon stole them from. I just want to say that, and it's also like how much at like different museums in London and in Paris were just stolen from Egypt or Africa. Anyway, back to this though, it's crazy that
it's
they got away with this. They just look like they belonged, which is 90%. Of doing
not
whatever
standing
you want
out.
And not standing out is just looking like you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. There's a theory if you go anywhere with a pizza box and a uniform, everyone will just assume that you're delivering pizza and they'll just let you through.
Universally, the experts seem to think that unless the thieves were not caught in the first 24 to 48 hours, they'll never get the jewelry back. They may catch the suspects eventually, but the pieces are going to be long gone. They said the thieves are not going to keep these pieces intact. They're going to break them apart. They're going to melt down the valuable metals. They're going to recut the stones. They're going to hide the evidence of the crime. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be difficult to sell the jewels intact because you're going to know that they were stolen. You're going to know what they were. How does this happen? Howard, it is the most famous museum in the universe.
Yeah.
How? And very intellectually, somebody said, I don't think we're facing amateurs. You think?
Yeah.
You right? think these? This wasn't their first time?
That'd be... If it was, then God bless them. Everybody likes a good heist story. The Louvre can make their money back on it just by selling the rights to it, you know? They lost.
The French Senate Finance Committee, somebody on that committee whose name I cannot pronounce, mm-hmm. said the gallery's alarm had recently been broken. And we have to wait for an investigation in order to find out if the alarm was working or not. That's going to be critical.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be key. Did your alarm work? And what other security protocols did you not have in place?
Inside job, question mark?
Right.
I would think
100%.
So. 100%. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. How hard is it to get a job at the Louvre? I would assume there's a background check, but maybe it needs to be a little more extensive.
Four masked thieves use a truck equipped with a mechanical lift to gain access to the Gallery of Apollo via a balcony close to the River Seine. Pictures from the scene showed a vehicle-mounted ladder leading up to a first-floor window. Two of the thieves cut through glass panes with a battery-powered disc cutter and entered the museum. They threatened the guards, who evacuated the building. They smashed the glass display cases and stole the jewels.
Mm.
And it was done in 8 minutes.
Yeah. I get that you need to have the real... Somebody on the text line brought up a good point. I get, like, having the real thing to make people feel like they got the bang for their buck. Would people know if they didn't have the real things out, though?
My guess is you could like, do a fake that is not...
have the real Mona Lisa
yeah.
out, other than people finding out and then attendance dropping, mm-hmm. would people really know? Probably not. People aren't... unless you have an art historian or somebody who's... can figure these things out with like a jeweler's loop or something looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to know. Why do you have the real things out?
So the alarms went off apparently. And that's when staff contacted security. The thieves tried to set fire to their vehicle outside, but mm-hmm. a museum staff member prevented that from happening. I don't know how much stuff like this costs, and maybe we can find value somewhere online in a different version of the story that I have. But in addition to that, emerald and diamond necklace was a jeweled headband that had nearly 2,000 diamonds in it. They also took a necklace that once belonged to Marie something something, the last queen of France. No, it's not that one.
Oh.
Amelie. I don't know how they pronounce that
Eugene.
There. Contains 8 sapphires and 631 diamonds.
Mm.
Wow.
Yes, Quentin.
I hate to break it to you, but at least in the dinosaur bone world, mm-hmm. most of the dinosaurs you see that are fully intact,
yeah,
in museums are not actually fully intact.
Yeah, if you go to the Prairie Fire, that's not a real T-Rex skeleton.
Like
crazy.
You know, the femur bone will be real.
Yeah.
You know, but the rest of the skeleton won't be real.
So you just have to have one piece of it that's real.
Right. Yeah. And the rest of it will be construct because, you know, they'll have a femur bone here and they'll yeah. have like a T-Rex head there. And I have learned that there are people who are dinosaur bone deniers, that they don't think dinosaurs existed.
Yeah.
And then it's all big, elaborate ruse.
No, because God, it's not referenced in the Bible.
So
how could it possibly? Because everything that's ever existed has to be referenced in the Bible. Otherwise, there's no way it could exist.
Yeah. So I hate to even have that part of the discussion, but it is true that like there are museums where like a little bit of it is the real thing. But in order to like, you know, have a conversation about the piece.
OK, so they dropped a couple of things mm-hmm. on their way out. The story is so entertaining to me because,
really?
Again, they made off on scooters. They dropped 2 items, including the crown of Empress Eugenie.
Mm hmm.
Empress to Napoleon III that was found broken near the scene. Investigators say they were puzzled why the culprits left behind the colossal 140-carat Regent diamond, which has been valued at $60 million. Speaking of the Mona Lisa, had they wandered down that corridor, they would have reached the Mona Lisa, which itself was stolen more than a century
1911,
ago. 1911 yeah.
By a former Louvre worker.
Yeah.
Didn't even work there currently. Just had worked there. And they're like, oh, hey, Bill, how you doing? He's like, oh, good. I'm just going to take this. I'll see you guys later. Like, just take that with your other stuff from your office in the box. Okay, cool.
Cast this movie, people. Who are we putting in this movie?
Here are a list of things that have been stolen from the Louvre. The jeweled sword of King Charles X, taken in 1976, via a second floor scaffold. Still missing. some painting that I can't pronounce, but it's very French, was just cut from its frame in 1998. The crown jewel pieces from the Galerie des Epaulins were stolen yesterday. Mm-hmm. That's what that was, the daylight heist. As far as casting the movie, yeah. I don't know, a bunch
who
of French guys.
Who do you want in
guys?
This one? Well, no, like George Clooney was really good in Ocean's 11. Put Brad Pitt in it, maybe.
He's too old.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is. George Clooney?
Have you seen him lately?
He looks great.
He looks awesome. Nah, he
could
be the boss.
He's 70 years old. Nah.
Are you kidding me? Look at who they put in the first set of Ocean's 11. There were the two old guys. You got to have a couple old guys that helped to fund the whole operation. Who else is... We just lost Robert Redford. That would have been a good choice. Who else can we put... Because you've got to have like the boss, and then you got to have the kids on scooters who have to go in and do the.
I don't know. The problem is naming any young actor anymore. There aren't any. Timothy Chalamet.
I was just gonna say that's the one that
French
we put
name.
Everything in.
So
yeah,
you got to put him in everything.
We have a bunch of Chris's.
Oscar Isaac, I guess. Pedro Pascal is the inside man.
That's a
French sounding name.
Yeah, you do need a guy on the inside that like gathered the information.
Yeah.
Initially,
you need a driver. Well, I mean, once they got away on the scooters, I'm assuming they met somewhere else and drove off, right?
Yeah.
So,
and then you need the buyer of all the stuff. Mm-hmm. And do they ever get caught? Probably not.
You need Anna. How about Anna Joy Taylor? Is that her name?
Anna Taylor Joy.
I always want to say her. Yeah, that's it. Anna Taylor Joy. Mm-hmm. I always want to say Anna Joy Taylor.
Who was the woman from? There are two people that stand out to me from The Queen's Gambit.
Yeah,
the lead actress in The Queen's Gambit. Mm-hmm. She has a very special look. Whatever her name was, I'll never think of it. Is that her? Anya Taylor Joy. I thought was a director. Okay.
No.
Okay, then yes, that's it. And then the woman from Killing Eve, who's opposite Sandra Oh in Killing Eve? She also has a very distinct look to her that would be good for something like this.
I don't know who that. Jodie Comer.
Oh, Jodie Comer. Yeah, she
Jodie
would be
Comer.
Great.
Fine.
She's got that look.
Anya Taylor-Joy just looks exotic. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that she'd be with the thieves. I think she'd be like the museum curator.
She'd be maybe the boss, like the leader of the pack.
Mm.
You know, she's the one that grew up in the art industry and somebody stole something from her dad when she was young.
Yeah.
And this is her way to get back.
It's been a while since we had a good heist movie.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I don't even, they were all the rage, and now it's kind of like, eh. Where you're getting the crew together, all that stuff.
Yeah, where they all meet beforehand, and like, they all have their place.
I think it'd be really funny if we found out the people that stole these were English. So, just like
that would be,
yeah.
I mean,
it's not enough that we beat you at Waterloo. We're going to take your jewels now too, buddy.
The other thing, when you say scooters, do you mean like a Vespa or do you mean like the little scooters?
No, they're like Razor scooters.
Just that scooter.
Yeah. Okay. Because that's also funny to me that, you know, while we have our problems with scooters here, you know, there are people getting on them and stealing art with it. Like, did you just have a really big backpack?
They go in between lanes of traffic more quickly. They can hide more easily. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. So the Louvre is closed today while they try to sort this out. We're never going to hear it.
Honestly,
the end of this.
I could make the argument good for these people because all they were doing was sitting in a museum. At least this way they can bring somebody some profit. And then you can sell them and they'll be recovered, go back to the museum. Somebody steals them again and you just keep the same scam going. It's actually kind of brilliant. I know Indiana Jones would say it belongs in a museum. I disagree with him. Coming up, Americans are still afraid of the dark, even though we never let it cast its shadow upon our face. We'll talk about that next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at how I met your mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
This one came to us out of studyfinds.org. Many grownups never outgrew their fear of what lurks in the shadows. A Tucker research survey said nearly 3 in 10 American adults still face fear of the dark. 1 in 10 adults continue sleeping with a stuffed animal or comfort item to feel secure at night.
Aww.
This is 2,000 Americans surveyed in late September. Men reported slightly higher rates than women at 33% compared to 26%. Perhaps more telling, they say, are the coping mechanisms that adults employ. A quarter of respondents sleep with a nightlight. 10% keep lights on throughout the night. Men were twice as likely as women to sleep with the lights fully on, 15% versus 7%. Okay.
Yeah.
The dog sleeps in the bed and that helps a lot, but I also, because the house is old and I just hear a lot of things and living alone, I feel like I'm more just kind of aware of everything that goes on. I have like motion censored, night lights throughout the house that'll turn on when I walk in a room and I like that. I keep one very soft light on in the living room for the dog and that helps so the dog doesn't get like confused around the house. I sleep better in a dark black room, but I like it when there's a light on in the house. Like if you were to drive by the street, like it if the house isn't totally dark.
We have like a nightlight now in our because we have a weird room. Like our bedroom has this large bathroom attached to it, and there's a nightlight in there now. And I haven't talked to Katie about this, but it's driving me insane because it's on, and I just can't. My brain. It's hard enough for me to go to sleep under the best conditions, but then when there's a nightlight on, it also throws me off. Mm-hmm. We also have a fridge in the room. It's like a dorm fridge with a clear glass door, and there's a little blue light on it. Mm-hmm. And there have been nights where I've had to wake up and cover that thing up because I was convinced I couldn't sleep. Now, whether that's accurate or whether it's just me making excuses for my insomnia, I'm not sure. But I'm not afraid of the dark. I've never had that specific anxiety or fear. But of all the fears out there, that's the one that makes the most sense.
Sure.
Like a fear of heights is stupid. Yeah. Just don't fall off of things. Hold on to things. Don't. But I have a fear of heights. A fear of certain bugs and spiders, snakes, whatever. Makes a little bit of sense. Those things might attack you, might be poisonous or venomous, even though it's very rare. Fear of the dark is the one that makes the most sense because there could be things out there that want to kill you. There could be somebody out there that wants to kill you. Also, you could trip and fall and die.
So you just can't see things.
Yeah.
You can't, if you hear something, you can't quickly identify what it is without, you know, having to get a flashlight or something like that. And so that makes sense too.
So of all the fears that make, like fear of death also makes sense. You can, well, actually that one doesn't make that much sense. You're going to die. Like you just need to accept it. Like it's not a fear necessarily, it's just a dread of death because it's going to happen. But I don't know. I don't have a fear of the dark. And that to me is the one that's most rational. I know it's something we kind of try to get kids out of. We teach them like,
why?
I don't know. Cause it actually makes sense to have a little nightlight on.
Yeah. Like it's not, I mean, the point at which it becomes a problem is if the light is too bright that it's keeping you awake.
Yep.
And so it needs to be off in the distance a little bit. It needs to, you know, under the bed, whatever. I like motion sensored lights that turn on as you need them. So that way it's not lighting up your whole house. They even have them for under your bed. Like the second your feet hit the floor.
Yeah.
There are other implications to that too, but yeah.
Do you find it interesting in the study that it's more men than women that are afraid of the dark?
I am surprised by that, and I don't know why.
And it's also interesting because it's one of those things too, where if that's just people willing to admit it,
right,
then it's a lot higher.
It's a lot higher.
That more men than women are afraid of the dark. What are you afraid of? Like women, it makes more sense. There's more threatening things out there to women than men.
Here's what I wonder is if it's a result of boys being told you got to be tough and not like we were more coddled a little bit with our fears. Okay.
And I wonder if you were told, just
deal with it and don't be afraid of anything.
Yeah.
And now you're adults and that broke you.
I'll throw this out to other parents out there. Is this something that you've battled with your kids over? Like turn the lights off, time to go to bed. Because mm-hmm. I've never done that with my kids. Never. I've never said like, hey, it's bedtime. Turn the lights off. I don't care. You want to have the lights on when you're sleeping? Have the lights on. Henry likes to sleep without any lights in the room. Perfect. Finn mm-hmm. likes to have the lights on. That's just their personality types. Finn is a little more skittish than Henry. I don't care. So long as I don't hear him up in there, what do I care if he has the lights on?
Yeah, what's the reason to force that? I mean, the fear must be
electricity bills, I guess.
Well, and the fear must be if they have lights on, they're going to be up doing stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas if the lights are off, then they're more likely to fall asleep.
Yeah.
But I also wonder if it has anything to do with like distraction, ADHD, distraction, whatever, because I'm somebody that I can't have music on while I'm trying to do things. Mm-hmm. I can't have a TV on if I'm trying to focus. And so I need lights off to be able to sleep.
It's so weird how our brains work differently. I have to have a TV. I have a TV on when I'm working.
Oh,
or
really?
I have music on. Not with lyrics, but if mm-hmm. the instrumentals help me focus. The TV on being in the background, if it's mm-hmm. a show I've watched a million times, helps me focus.
Can't deal with it.
I don't know why.
I can't. It just, my mind will focus on the louder thing or the thing that I'd rather, like, I will not focus on work because I'd rather pay attention to what's on TV instead of on the thing that I actually need to be working on.
Yeah. From the text line, adults. As an adult, I don't have a nightlight. I have home security mood lighting. I have a thing. Yeah, we have a thing on our bed that if you get up, uh-huh. the light comes on.
That's what
bed.
I said. Yeah, yeah, like you can have motion sensor lights that will come on.
I don't know. Text line 913-586-7798. If you're still afraid of the dark, or
we're not judging.
Yeah, we're not judging. Is that reasonable at this point? I don't think that it's unreasonable at all. I think it's the most reasonable fear you can possibly have.
And again, what are you doing things about it to feel secure besides turning lights on? Again, I fully admit that I feel better having that dog in my bed because the dog will bark at everything.
Like if you lived on a street that was pitch black, wouldn't that be terrifying?
Yes.
Yeah. If there were no street lights, wouldn't that be terrifying? I would be scared.
Yeah. Just because you never know who's coming down the street. You never know what, you know.
Yeah,
this is why we have cameras.
If I was out walking at night, which again, I'm privileged as a man to be able to do without fear anyway. Mm-hmm. But if I was out walking at night and there were no streetlights on, I'd go back home.
Or use a flashlight. But yeah, like that's why they tell you don't go down dark alleys because they're dark and you can't see anything.
How violent South Overland Park can be. 913-586-7798. Your calls and texts coming up next on Midday.
We're talking about the study out of Tucker Research. Out of 2,000 Americans were surveyed in late September, 29% admit they are still afraid of the dark. 33% of men, 26% of women. A quarter of respondents sleep with a nightlight. 10% keep lights on throughout the night. Some keep your lights fully on everywhere in the house all night long.
I know we treat it like a silly fear. We treat way too many fears like they're silly, which I think is a compounding problem. But this is also one of the more reasonable fears I have. I do think that that's one of the problems with fears is mm-hmm. like if I look at a list of them, like ornithophobia, that's hard to pronounce.
Wow.
And say it's fear of birds.
Okay.
Okay. But like every fear is either linked back to personal trauma or learned behavior over centuries. And it can be from a personal trauma where a bird attacked you, or your ancestors realized that birds spread disease. Mm-hmm. And culturally, you realize, let's stay away from birds because they got a bunch of ticks and stuff hiding in their feathers. You never know.
That is an interesting question in general, philosophically, with 4 minutes left in the show. Mm-hmm. Why do we encourage people to overcome their fears? Why is it not just okay that I'm afraid that I'm going to die by my foot getting stuck at the end of an escalator?
The only thing I would argue is
that it, if it's inhibitive.
So right, if it's keeping you from doing things that you...
If you have agoraphobia, where you're afraid of going outside, that's a problem.
Yes.
If you have a fear of heights, it's stopping you from... You get a job at a building, but guess what? It's on the 20th floor. Oh, no, I can't work there because I'm afraid of heights.
Yeah.
That could be an issue. If you had a job where you had to ride an escalator up every day, I would say maybe... You need to see or talk to your therapist.
If you're afraid of flying, but you like to travel, that's something worth getting over.
So otherwise, it's not silly. It's not weird.
Yeah.
It's, everybody has something that scares them. And a lot of people like to think, oh, I don't. Yeah. That same person, you dangle a mouse in front of them, they'd lose their minds.
Yeah. Like what? What's the snake that's in... Those blue racer snakes I still am afraid of in the backyard.
Oh, yeah. Katie's deathly afraid of snakes.
Oh.
Like, deathly. She can't watch a movie if a snake's in the movie.
I don't know how afraid I am of them because I've not had a lot of interaction with them, but I know I'm a lot more afraid of them if they're in my yard.
It's also a conditional basis. I wouldn't be afraid of a snake if I saw it in front of me in the yard. I would be terrified if it came near me. You know what I mean? Like
like if you saw it at a distance, big deal.
Yeah, if I saw it like 10 feet away from me, like, oh my God, look, a snake. But then if it turned around and started coming at me, I'm like, ah!
Okay, so the blue racers, I mean, they call them racers because they're fast. Yeah. And yeah, they tend to come, they're not nervous about it. I have a big pile of firewood and it's covered by this big leather cover thing. Mm-hmm. But I was doing a fire last weekend and I lifted the cover up. I don't know why I was just so nonchalant about it. And yeah, there was a couple of them that just bolted out like they were going to eat me.
What I find funny is doing the show and doing radio for so long, I've no longer have any fear about being on air, any nervousness, anything like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll have guests in. And they'll get agitated or like nervous before we go. I'm almost like, what's the matter with you?
Yeah.
Like, what are you kidding me? Like,
remember
this is nothing.
Where she's been, I mean, she's been in high school.
Yes.
And was like,
she was kind of nervous.
Yeah. And it's like, you've been on TV.
You were on Law and Order.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's also amazing the people that will tell you the difference between doing this and speaking on stage, like giving speeches.
Yeah.
This I don't think about.
That doesn't bother
me. Listen, but on stage could get me a little twitchy.
I've done that enough now that it doesn't bother me, but it's just like doing this. The first time I was on air, threw up in between commercial breaks.
Yeah.
But now it's nothing. And same thing speaking on stage. It's just, it's exposure.
Right.
The more you do it, the less afraid of it you are.
Yeah.
Here's a weird phobia. Dentophobia. It's a fear of dentists.
I bet that's common.
That's probably very common.
That's very common.
I would feel bad if I was a dentist and they literally named
a fear after you.
A fear after my profession. Like, God, I went to college for this and you named a fear after me. You know what? I have this psychophobia. I guess that's a fear of psychologists.
And most of the time, if you're at the dentist and you're afraid of the dentist, some of that's going to be your fault probably because you waited too long to go and you know they're going to do something because you didn't get your teeth cleaned twice a year like you were supposed to.
That would actually be the worst fear to have, a fear of psychologist.
How are you solving it?
How are you going to deal with it?
How are you getting over it?
Except for the one big problem I have is sitting down on a Chase lounge and exposing my thoughts to someone.
Yes.
I bet that actually is a very common one, though. All right. We are out of here. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Dan and Parks is up next. Love you guys. Bye.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey,
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow, it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.